Gavalikai Podcast, number 2. Welcome back to another edition of the Gavalikai Show, where you can participate in a thought-provoking discussion of current events as well as Divrei Torah and music. Our opening music was from Tzilva Zemer from the song Yibana HaMikdash. In this show, I'd like to talk about two Purim topics and an analysis of the Kedima Party. So, let us begin. I don't know what your Purim was like. I know what my Purim was like. And I'm not quite sure what Purim is supposed to be like. So let me give you some of my thoughts about how Purim is, how Purim used to be, and maybe we can think about an idea of what Purim is supposed to be. Let me tell you what Purim is like for me. Purim means spending a lot of time in my minivan going through West Rogers Park, Peterson Park, Albany Park, which are three neighborhoods in the Chicago area, delivering shalach manos with the kids. Basically, it means driving to a street, stopping, telling the kids where they should drop the shalach manos off. They go to people's houses, drop off the shalach manos, get other shalach manos, maybe they get some money, go back into the car, drive into the next spot. All nice and peaceful. But somehow that just doesn't feel like that's the purpose of shalach manos, is just exchanging shalach manos with people. I mean, what if I didn't drop it off by them? So then what? I mean, I don't feel like I developed a closer connection, or that I created more achdus in Klal Yisrael. What's going on over here? Is this what Purim is supposed to be? Is this what shalach manos is supposed to be? I thought shalach manos is supposed to be I give something to someone and this creates more of a friendliness, of a closeness, of a kesher, of an achdus, of a something. It doesn't seem like it feels like much of anything. And I'm not quite sure if the shalach manos is even fulfilling its purpose. And it definitely doesn't seem like Purim. It could be worse. I have a friend who doesn't have a family. He's not into shalach manos. He does the bir mitzvah. He gives shalach manos to one person. He does the mitzvah. And he can't drink wine because of a health condition. He doesn't have a family. What kind of a perm does he have? Nothing. I can't complain. I'm in my car. My kids are behaving. They're not fighting. It could be a lot worse. But somehow it doesn't feel Purimdik. I don't feel any simcha from that. I don't walk away feeling like I really made a lot of people happy by delivering 50 shalach manos all over the neighborhood. Somehow it doesn't seem to be doing what it's supposed to be doing. In yeshiva days, I remember it was basically going partying from one house to the other house to the house. It was a lot of simcha. It wasn't simcha that we were creating, it was simcha that other people were creating, and we were just participating in. And they're not even sure they do that nowadays in yeshiva. It seems like a lot of bachim are going around collecting for yeshivas or for other tzedakahs. So I'm not quite sure where Purim is in yeshiva today. What do other people do? You know, you've got these gvirim, they sit at home, and they have these bachim that come over and they dance for them. And then they ask them for money, and they're writing out checks for $50, $36, $100, $500. Thousands and thousands of dollars worth of checks for tzedakah are written on Purim. I'm not sure that these gevirim are having a great Purim time with these bachrim. I mean, it's not like these are really professional acts. I mean, they got some cute costumes, but I don't know. I don't think that they're really connecting with the balabatim. I don't think they're really having a great time. What's the Rav of my shul doing? Oh, he's sitting at home, and people are coming, and he's saying the Vitar with them, and they're dropping off Shalachmanis by the Rav, and the Rebbetzin is giving their kids Shalachmanis. I don't think I would like that either. You know, sitting at home and having people visit me, and I don't know, I'm not quite sure what I want to get out of a Purim, but I know that it's not giving me the simcha that I would like. I think I would like to start the Purim Suda a little bit earlier during the day, have enough time to be able to drink slowly over the day, but I don't know. I'm not quite sure Purim is doing what it's supposed to be doing. I've read other things. There was some, I think it was a Breslover chassid who wrote some pamphlet in Lakewood, I think about 15 years ago, talking about how important it is to daven on Purim. It's a tremendous opportunity because on Purim we say Kol Poshet Yad Nosnim Lo, and from Shemayim also, if you daven, then from Shemayim they also give you what you wouldn't normally get. Maybe. I just don't think Purim is a day of davening. And I see that around town there are a lot of places that the fathers are learning with the sons, and they called yeshivas Mordechai Hatzadik, and they give out prizes to the kids for learning a half hour, either after Shacharis or before Mincha or after Mincha or sometime in the afternoon. And it's nice to see fathers and sons learning in the middle of a Purim day. I'm not quite sure if that fits in either. So I would like to hear some ideas about the way Purim is supposed to be, because one thing's for sure, Purim is supposed to be a happy day, and it's supposed to be a day. The goals of Purim are supposed to be, it's supposed to be a happy day, and it's supposed to be a day that brings more Avos Yisrael and more love between Jews. And I don't really see that happening around here. So I'm not quite sure where things are going wrong. One thing that I did do on Purim was I did some thinking about the story of Purim, and the story is it's brought down in the Megillah, and how the Gemara describes it. And I was thinking about two ideas. One is the Purim story starts off talking about Achashverosh's party. He had a party for 180 days, and then at the end of this party that he had for 180 days, which was a party for heads of state, heads of the military, other important notables, he made a 7-day party for the people of Shushan. And Mordechai made an announcement that the people of Shushan, the Jewish people of Shushan, should not participate in the party. And it doesn't really explain what was wrong with being at Achashverosh's party. And if I remember correctly, there were two things that were pointed out that were wrong. One is that at this party, they were using the kelim from the Beis HaMikdash. These were vessels. These were glasses and various cups and different things that were used to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu with in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Holy Temple. And to be used by a king for a secular party was a desecration of them. And for the Jews to see that, it should have brought them to tears. It should have made them feel sad to think about that they still, after 70 years, they still don't have a Beis HaMikdash. And it didn't really bother them. They were able to solace the fact that these kelim were being used, these vessels were being used. But perhaps there's a more important reason why they shouldn't be at that party. That party was the equivalent of, I would think, a rock concert. You're talking about people getting drunk. You're talking about lewd activities. You're talking about women. You're talking about a lot of things that are not Jewish. And that is not a place for Jews to be. When non-Jews are having a great time and enjoying their forms of entertainment, that is a place of tumah. That is a place that will not inspire a Jew to serve God better. A Jew needs to serve Hashem with simcha, with happiness, but his happiness comes from a totally different source. And when he comes to a party like Achashverosh made, it's something that will cause him to feel drawn to this world and to the pleasures of this world and away from his goal, which is a Jewish goal of trying to be an angelic person, a person who is full of holiness and spirituality. So it seems to me that was the principal reason the Jewish people should not be in Achashverosh's party. And I'm thinking, what kind of a lesson can we draw from that? It seems that nowadays there are many, many forms of entertainment that are available for Jewish people that non-Jews have created. And it's gotten to the point that you can have a Jewish performer performing non-Jewish forms of entertainment, which to me seems very ironic. And there needs to be a separation between Jews and non-Jews, especially at these kinds of forms of entertainment where non-Jews are trying to relax. I don't think they're really interested in seeing religious Jews there while the non-Jews are relaxing. It's something to think about. It's something to think about what having fun does to a person and how it motivates a person to seek more fun and how it draws a person away from his important role, a Jew's role, of serving Hashem. Another thought that I had about Purim was a contrast in the three different types of leaders you have in the Purim story. I see in the Purim story three leaders. You have Achashverosh, who is the king. You have Haman, who is second in command. And you have the Jew Mordechai. And it's interesting to see their methods of leadership and how effective their methods of leadership were. Let's start with Achashverosh. He makes his party. What was the purpose of the party? It was to curry favor with everybody. Chazal point out that here was a king who killed his wife in order to please his friend, and killed his friend in order to please his wife. He killed Vashti because Haman told him that that was the right thing to do, and he killed Haman because Esther told him that was the right thing to do. So he's a person that didn't really know what to do. He was asking advice all the time, and he was trying to make everybody feel good, but he really was not a solid person. In fact, one of the reasons why Esther invited Haman to the party was because she knew how volatile Achashverosh was. So if she could get him drunk and get him angry, and Haman was right there, she would have a good chance of getting Haman eliminated. So this is the kind of a leader Achashverosh was. Very powerful, very rich, but unsure of himself and not on his own two feet. The next leader we see is Haman. Haman's shrewd. He knows how to manipulate people. But you also see that he doesn't really care about the people's welfare. All he seems to be interested in is his own honor. And the problem is he can't even get enough. I mean, here he's got everybody bowing down to him. And Mordechai doesn't bow down to him. And he basically asks for special permission from the king, comes in the middle of the night in order to get Mordechai eliminated. I mean, this man was so rich and so powerful, and yet he was not able to solace the fact that there was somebody who wasn't going to bow down to him. But what you see in the way that Haman was a better leader than Achashverosh is he knew his own mind. He didn't really care. Well, he didn't really feel that he had to go and you know, I'm not really sure about that. I was about to say that you see that he didn't really need to fawn to people and to, but he had this shrewdness about him. I have to think about that a little bit. I just see him as a much more sure of himself kind of a person than Achashverosh. And lastly, we have Mordechai. And Mordechai was also a leader. And he did what was right. And you see how he talks to Esther and he uses convincing arguments. He was straight, very straight. And he was telling people, okay, don't go to the party. He was telling people that you have to fast. He was a leader with a leadership where he was concerned about his people and he wanted to save their lives. But he was tough. And he was strong. And not everybody accepted him. Even later, when he got all the honor from Ahasuerus and he was dressed in royal garb and he got Haman's house, it still says he was only Ratzui L'Roi V'Chav, and he wasn't acceptable to everybody. So that's an interesting thing to think about, that a leader has to be able to be his own person, but he has to have principles guiding him, not just whatever the polls say. And he also needs to be very smart, and he has to care about his people and not care about his own honor. Which leads us to Israeli politics. Something's really strange going on in Israel. I'm not quite sure I have a grasp of it. For the first time, instead of having only two major parties, there's now three major parties, and it seems like the largest party is the I don't know party. I don't know who I'm going to vote for. You've got Labor, you've got Likud, and you've got this new party called Kadima. Now, the idea of Kadima made a lot of sense to me, because here you have a guy, Sharon, who is not interested in the hawkish views of the Likud, and he's not interested in the dovish views of Labor. He had his own idea. He was a leader. So he created a central party, which is sort of, I think what he was doing over there was he was taking the social ideas of the Likud, because he didn't like the socialism of Labor, yet he was taking sort of like the dovish, we're going to give back the land to the Arabs kind of idea, and mixing it together to create his own idea. But he kept a lot of things to his chest. He didn't say very much what he was planning on doing. Very shrewd individual. There's only one problem. He's gone now. He's in a coma. So you've got this guy, Olmert, who's never a very liked person, who has taken over this party, and it seems like the only reason why it's had any success is because Sharon started it, and they just assumed he's going to do whatever Sharon had planned originally. Now, what gets the Yated Ne'aman very nervous is that it seems that Kadima has now taken on some of the ideas of the old Shinui party. Shinui fell apart. Baruch Hashem. You know, that party was like so anti-Haredi, that's all they were interested in. They had no real principles of their own, just, okay, destroy the Haredim. Don't give the Haredim anything. And there's a very interesting headline over here in the Yated, which says, Kadima, the new Shinui. I'm not quite sure that that's an accurate representation of what Kadima is about, but it does point out that they do have certain policies that the religious parties are not going to put up with, and would make it very hard for Kadima to make a coalition with religious parties. The examples that are given over here, it says that Shitrit made an announcement of Kadima's socioeconomic agenda, which is based largely on the introduction of a negative income tax for Israel's poor, and that Kadima intends to push for legislation. And this is the point that the Yated's getting at. The legislation is going to legalize civil marriage in Israel, which is a big no-no, as well as secular forms of burial. You have to understand that in Israel, one of the beauties of the country is that people get married there. It's Jews getting married to Jews, and it's Jews who get married to the Jews that they're allowed to get married to under halacha. And that's an attempt to prevent intermarriage, and it's also an attempt to prevent mamzerim from spreading. And Kadima wants to do away with the rabbinic control over marriage, and that's going to make quite a bit of a mess. I'm not quite sure what the whole problem is with this burial thing, but it's going to make quite a mess if they get this legislation passed legalizing civil marriage. My dream is that a religious party like Shas will get the most amount of seats in this coming election, and they'll be able to make the Knesset, which I think if they manage to do that, they will create a government that will be fair to everybody. Because despite what the secular population in Israel has been brainwashed into thinking, Haredim are not interested in being a bunch of fanatics demanding that everybody do things their way. They happen to be very fair. They're interested in the poor. They're interested in, they've got their priorities straight as far as how money should be distributed. And this is something that secular people don't seem to get. They think that Haredim are interested in jamming religion down their throat, and Haredim are feeling just the opposite, that the secular Jews are trying to jam poverty down the Haredim's throats. There needs to be a dialogue over there between the Haredim and the Secheleinim, between the secular Jews and the religious Jews, and it would be nice to see, for once, having religious people in the government. I was very pleased when Lepoliansky became the head of the mayor of Jerusalem, and he's doing, as far as I understand, a wonderful job beautifying the city, and he's not, one thing's for sure, whatever you're going to say about him, he's not jamming religion down the throats of the secular Jews in Jerusalem. Okay, time for some thank yous. First of all, I'd like to thank Podomatic for providing the space for this show at their website. And I'd like to thank Israelism's podcast, especially Carol Wardy, for her encouragement. She went and mentioned my show on her show, on the Israelism show, which is a very nice show about what's going on in Israel. And with her encouragement, I had to get another show up because she said she's going to be listening to this. I also want to thank Jeff Osias from the New Jewish Wake-Up Call, who is also on Podomatic. He's a professional broadcaster who has now taken up podcasting, and I wish him all the best. And I'd like to thank Tlova Zemer for their wonderful music for the start of the show. And if you'd like to leave any comments about this show, you can go to Podcast Pickle and look over there. There's a place there to put comments. I would like if you could add me to your favorites on Podcast Pickle. Also, we have a comment line at 206-666-4897. That's 206-666-4897 if you have any comments for the show. Until next time, this is Yisrael Eichmann, the Gevaldic Guy. Shalom, oh, shalom, oh, shalom, oh, shalom, oh, shalom.